It's roughly a 1,200-mile hiking trail entirely within Wisconsin, showcasing our state's Ice Age landscapes. We're enjoying the Ice Age Trail in the summer months on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. More than 600 miles of the trail are marked, usually with a yellow skinny rectangle called a blaze. We're traveling to the gorgeous vistas, hearing about your favorite places on the trail. Have you wanted to thru-hike the Ice Age Trail? What's the attraction, or what's stopping you? We're at 800-642-1234. Luke Cloberdans is Director of Philanthropy for the Ice Age Trail Alliance, and Luke backpacked all 1,200 miles or so of the Ice Age Trail in 49 days in 2003. Luke, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me, Kate. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you're here, and we're going to hear about your story of hiking the trail here in a moment, but can you start out by explaining what is the Ice Age Trail?
Sure. So the Ice Age Trail is, or when it's complete, will be about a 1,200-mile-long footpath, and it traces the glacial formations across the state. So if you can visualize, it starts in Door County and roughly parallels Lake Michigan and sweeps west of Milwaukee through Heartland and Delafield and around Janesville and nips the southwest corner of Madison before marching steadily north and swings around Anago and heads west and ultimately ends up at the St. Croix River. And that follows the, like I said, the furthest extent of the last glacial experience we had.
So why isn't the trail complete? Because the inspiration for it goes back to the 1920s.
Yeah, so the trail isn't complete just because we haven't been able to secure all of the land. So right now we have about 660 miles on the ground and open for public use, and there are a lot of different land ownership across the area, across the state, that we try to navigate. And so we work with willing sellers and work to protect their land so that we can build the trail through it. So it's been an ongoing process, and it's one that will probably be going on for quite a few more years yet. But we do make some steady progress each year as we work to close those gaps.
Where do the hikers go for those gaps? Like, where do they hike through when the trail isn't connecting?
Right. So if someone were to hike the whole entire trail, we call them 1,000-milers. We don't really get too much into the weeds on how they do it. You may have heard about Corey Waltering, a gentleman who just ran the trail. And
yeah, in like 20-some days?
Yes.
It's, what the?
That takes some real fortitude there. But what we suggest as an organization is a suggested road connector routes. So as one were to come to the end of a segment that is built and open for public use, what they would do is they could look at our guidebook or our atlas or online, what we call our hiker resource map. And what we've done is we've picked sort of those quieter, perhaps more scenic road connectors between segment to segment, and then they walk those. But they certainly don't have to. Those are suggestions only. So as long as someone gets from point A to point B in between those connectors and they walk the entirety, or run it in Corey's case, then we consider that a 1,000-miler.
Where do you stay overnight? Where do you camp along the way?
Mm-hmm. So in addition to like existing campgrounds, places like Devil's Lake or Mothy Lake over in the Kettle Moraine, we also have a system that we've been developing over the last few years called dispersed camping areas. And we refer to them as DCAs because we're a National Park Service project. We have to use an acronym. And we call those DCAs, and we encourage people to look at those on our hiker resource map, sort of sketch out your pacing, if you will, and then they can stay at those sites. And those are meant for long-distance hikers, and there's usually a post somewhere that displays the rules. They are all leave no trace, so no campfires. You can use a cook stove, things like that. And as long as you can see that post, you can set up your tent. And you can actually walk from the southern end of Dane County all the way to Devil's Lake and catch a dispersed camping area every about 10 to 13 miles or so. So even amongst all the urban setting here that we have in Dane County where we're based, one can still backpack and enjoy the features of the Ice Age Trail.
We're talking with Luke Cloberdans, Director of Philanthropy for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. We're learning about the alliance and the people who use the trail each year for hiking and backpacking, snowshoeing in the winter, connecting with nature. You can join in. Have you hiked the entire Ice Age Trail at one time, or maybe segments of it? What was that like for you? What did you learn about yourself in doing it? And what were the greatest challenges? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Luke, let's go deeper into how the glaciers from the last ice age shaped the land that the trail covers and what it is like for someone to walk slowly through these land features.
Mm-hmm, sure. So, you know, as the mile-thick sheet of ice sort of pushed southward from the North Pole, you know, it worked in a lot of ways, like this giant conveyor belt and picking up and depositing soil and rock and boulders and moving those forward each, with each advance. But it wasn't like the glacier didn't just come down and stop and then recede, but there were many sort of this back-and-forth motion of advancement and receding that the glacier did on the landscape, and that really carved and gouged out the land. And where the trail travels, we have on the roughly the terminal moraine, so the very last advance of that conveyor belt. And so we have a lot of ridges and sort of a roller coaster ride, if you will, of hiking across the state. There are certainly areas where we dip into the driftless area in Cross Plains, where our headquarters is. And then going back into some of those plains that would have been fully glaciated. So it's really the route really interprets all of the different experiences of the glacier, including where the glacier didn't go, which is a big part of that story as well. Places like in the Kettle Moraine, you would have two lobes of the glacier coming down and pushing up against one another. So, you know, when the trail was, a vision or an idea for Ray Zillmer, in a Milwaukee-based attorney and accomplished mountaineer, you know, he had this vision of the trail being complete, and his vision really started in the Kettle Moraine. And so that's a place where we, you know, that's sort of where we got our story started, but it's also the place where one can see some of the best examples of that glaciation and features from kettles to cames to eskers and all sorts of geology. And I think really to experience that, and something that really settled in with me when I did my through hike, was when you move slowly on that landscape, you really get a sense of the power of the glacier.
Yeah.
And using, I mean, that's just such a force. And there are places along the trail where the earth is still rebounding. So there we have a program called our Cold Cache program where people can go out and explore these glacial features. They're documented. And one of the places is called Earth's Rebound, where the earth is literally still sort of bouncing back from the weight and force of the glacier. So really, really an amazing experience for our landscape, and one that we still, you know, get to enjoy the benefits of today on the Ice Age Trail.
We're talking with Luke Cloberdans of the Ice Age Trail Alliance. He's our guide to the roughly 1,200-mile trail. He's been a through hiker. We're going to hear his story. You can join in with your Ice Age Trail stories. Let us know your backpacking tips. How do you keep your backpack lighter on a long trek? What things can you live without on the trail? And what do you consider essential, especially in the summer months in hiking? It's 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Luke Cloberdans here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend as we explore the Ice Age National Scenic Trail. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The trail's western end, as we've been talking about, overlooks the St. Croix River at Interstate Park in Polk County. Its eastern terminus is in Pottawatomie State Park in Sturgeon Bay. That's Door County. follows the line through Wisconsin where the last glacier stopped. You can join in with your hiking tips, favorite segments, features to see on the trail you don't want to miss. What are your most memorable hikes on the Ice Age Trail? What do you like about it? What critters have you seen along the way? Join in 800-642-1234. Luke Kloberdans is with the Ice Age Trail Alliance, and he's hiked the length of the trail. He did that in 2003. He stays with us. So, Luke, let's hear about that experience of hiking the whole trail. What inspired you to do that? What were you thinking is what I'm really asking.
I think I was really influenced by the people that had gone before me. I'd always been an outdoors person, always enjoyed being out in the woods and looking for trails. And I moved to Wisconsin in 2000, and I was a teacher at the time. So I'd volunteer a little bit here and there, started talking with people who had the experience, and I always kind of see that magic in their eyes, and I was just really inspired by the stories they told. And I was at a point in my career where I was sort of like, I need to figure out what I was going to be when I grew up. Wasn't sure what I wanted to do and had a lot of things that I was sort of processing. And so I decided I'm going to go take a walk and figure it out. And so the Friday after school let out, I packed up my classroom and my wife took me to the Pottawatomie and I started walking. But it was really just the inspiration of the people before me and just wanting to really get to know this state that I had recently moved to. So a little bit of sort of angst in my life and then a little bit of inspiration. So that combination inspired me to go for it.
Were you lonely at all in this walkabout, or did thoughts continually fill your mind?
Yeah, a lot of the long distance trails have these communities of hikers that go out, and so you're constantly, you know, going by and talking or passing by other hikers, and you have some contact there. But especially in 2003, less so now. But the Ice Age Trail was really lesser known. We didn't have a guidebook. We didn't have an atlas. We didn't have some of the publications we do now to help people navigate their way.
Oh, wait, there's not an app for that in 2003.
There is an app now, but there wasn't then. But I didn't have a phone, and yes, it was lonely at times. You know, I went out and I needed to be away from people to sort of process. And what I learned there is that the people of the state, by and large, were just really wonderful. I mean, I'd be walking down the road and on a road connector, and you know, I remember a family drove by me, kind of looked at me, and then they came back around and handed me a Coke. And there was it was such a tasty drink on a hot day on a blacktop road. And people would welcome me into their homes and take me around to meet their relatives, make me food. It was just, I really, really rekindled my appreciation for people and especially people in the state of Wisconsin and how they treated me, as someone that they didn't even have to think twice about walking by. And it really was something that people were the greatest thing about my hike were some of the people that I met along the way. But processing time, thinking a lot about things, you know, in the course of 12 hours of steadily walking, you can process quite a bit of information, especially over the course of 40-some days. So you really got down to the core. And for me personally, my feeling was I was just being a big complainer, and I needed to get over it. The world's a beautiful place. And I think the lesson I took from my hike was that, you know, I'm really, really pretty insignificant in a lot of ways, and that's really freedom when you don't have to worry about, you know, all the things that we think are really important when we take a walk and we see that these hills and some of these trees have been here a lot longer than we have, and they'll be here a lot longer after we're gone. So, you know, that in and of itself is freedom, and it sort of recalibrates how we interpret moments that we might think are you know, really important when maybe they aren't quite as important as we make them out to be.
Mm. Was there ever a point when you thought you had enough, when you wanted to quit?
Almost daily, yeah. So, you know, there's always a reason to quit. There's always a reason to stop. And I think what it was for me was really finding that the reasons to continue are just as or more important than the reasons to quit. And, you know, there were a lot of times where I was done for, but then it was shortly followed by moments of, you know, just stunning beauty on the trail, or, like I said, someone just stopping by to lift up my spirits, what long-distance hikers call trail magic, where someone or something happens to you that is just really lucky in a lot of ways. And so those little moments picked me up along the way, and that was, you know, writing to my students, telling all my students I was going to go do this thing. I couldn't let them down. I couldn't let that happen, So I kept walking, and, you know, it took me quite a bit of time before I finally got to a point where, you know, I was really just thoroughly loving the experience. And, you know, that happened about two-thirds into the trip, where it was suddenly just all of this weight and all these worries just sort of left, and I could just walk and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it does happen, but I think a long-distance walk, you know, you change physically and you change mentally along that pathway, and I think that's what's so appealing about it for me and for a lot of people, is just that idea of, you know, growth that really changes who you are and what you decide to do.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Luke Kloberdans. He's philanthropy director for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. We're learning about hiking the trail and Luke's connection to the trail as a through hiker. Taking your experiences and your questions, have you wanted to go backpacking on the Ice Age Trail but were concerned? What worries you? Let us know about your backpacking tips and tricks. 800-642-1234. Luke, what was it like when you finished?
Well, I was, you know, really happy. So my last day was about a 38-mile day of walking, and I was just really, really ready to get done. But it's kind of a bittersweet moment. So when you finish a long walk, you know, you kind of leave a friend in some ways. And so I arrived at Interstate Park, and it was about the middle of the afternoon, but I couldn't find the rock that had the plaque on it that everyone has to get a picture by. And I ended up being late at night, or at dusk at least, where I finally found that rock and got a picture. And I have two photos from that. One is of me looking like really happy, and the other one is more probably authentic, where I'm just sort of like my head's down, I'm really beat. And my wife picked me up, and, you know, I got a cheeseburger and slept on the way home. And people oftentimes, when they finish a long hike, have some, you know, that feeling of wanting to get back out there and sort of like this loss in their lives. And you know, I live in Lodi, so the trail goes right through downtown. So I always had some sort of connection with the trail after I had left. But certainly there's that feeling of waking up and walking and eating and going to sleep and repeating every day that really simplifies life. And as life becomes complex, when you come back home, you know, you have to learn to deal with those things. The week after I got back, my wife is a painter, and she had an art show in Chicago, and I drove a trailer through downtown Chicago.
Oh, goodness. During rush hour. The contrast.
During rush hour. I had to pull over and get in the passenger seat. But so you have to adjust and give your time to adjust when you come back from those long trips.
I'm wondering, you know, at the end there, you just couldn't find that rock. Did you find in any places that the trail was a little bit difficult to navigate, that you couldn't see or know where the trail was, like how it was marked?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, again, 2003 was a different time for the Ice Age Trail Alliance, and we didn't have as many volunteers. Our standards were just beginning to become professionalized in terms of trail construction, which includes signage and our land protection. And so when the trail was first mapped out, a lot of it was done, let's put it down, you know, and so it was put on logging roads and places like that, which, you know, are prone to be logged again after so many years. So there were times during my walk where you know, just completely lost. And some of those places are still there today, but in much better shape now. We've taken great pride in our signage and making sure that people don't get lost. And I think that comes from several different sources. One is, as an organization, like I said, professionalizing our craft of trail construction, but also the increased number of people that have done the trail, and then those people having those experiences of, boy, I got lost here. I'm going to go help improve that signage. So we actually have a group of women in Waukesha County, and they call themselves the Blazing Babes. And they have all, or many of them have completed the entire trail, and they travel all throughout the state, and they refresh our blaze, the yellow blaze, in places that need it. So some volunteers in other parts of the state may call them up and say, hey, we could use some help.
Oh.
And they travel all over and to make it a much better experience than, much more navigable than it was at one point. So it's getting a lot better.
Yeah, Ice Age Trail, largely built and maintained by volunteers. Luke Kloberdans is philanthropy director for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. You can join in with your questions, your tips for first-time through hiking or end-to-end backpacking trips, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On a Friday, it is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, thanks for being here. We're exploring the Ice Age Trail. We have a through hiker as our guide. Luke Kloberdans hiked the entire Ice Age Trail in 2003. It took him about 49 days, and he loved it so much, he now works for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. Have you hiked the entire Ice Age Trail? What was it like, and what did you learn about yourself by doing it? What was the hardest part? Be part of this at 800-642-1234, and Luke Kloberdans stays with us. Luke, we heard from Tammy, called in, couldn't stay with us. Tammy wants to know if you can bike at all on the trail.
No, the trail is designated as foot travel only by the National Park Service. Now, there are places where the trail overlaps with an existing bike trail, such as the Anapee Trail in northeast part of the state, or the Badger State Trail, where there are multiple uses. But by and large, the trail is for foot travel only. But I will say that people that are attempting to do the 1,000-mile trail, when they hike a segment or even a road connector stretch of trail, oftentimes what they do is they park a bike on one end, and then they drive back to where they want to start. They hike the whole thing, and then they bike the road connectors all the way back. Now, as long as they walk at all, we call them 1,000-milers, and so a lot of people will use bikes as a method of transportation, but they're not allowed on the trail by and large.
What about horses?
Same with horses.
Okay.
They're not allowed. So if it's foot powered, such as snowshoeing or trail running, mm-hmm. are very popular. Those things are all fair game. You can ski on the trail and things like that.
But, cross country skiing is allowed.
It is correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Places like Lapham Peak, which have a great cross-country ski system. You know, there are places where people will take the Ice Age Trail on at times. It's one of my favorite ways to use the trail now.
Hmm.
It's not always the neatly groomed path that some people are used to, but it's an adventure.
So we're in the middle of a pandemic now. A lot of people might be thinking this is a good time to hike the Ice Age Trail. Is the trail getting more use right now during this time?
Yes. So the trail is getting quite a bit more use. In some places, more use than we would like. That we have volunteers actively out trying to repair places that have seen some really excessive use, and especially, you know, earlier in the springtime when people were itching to get out, but we had our melting season followed by spring rains. It was really tough on the trail in places. So. We have a project going right now called Reconnect, where we're reconnecting our volunteers with the trail, getting them back out and safely doing so. And so we are doing a big push on how to safely hike. So a lot of the same things apply in terms of being safe during this pandemic. So stay 6 feet apart. If you use the trail for running, you know, please use a mask, especially when you're coming up close to people. So, you know, give yourself that extra 15 feet or so of putting a mask on before you approach another hiker, say, coming through. Step off to the trail if someone's coming and try to be as safe as you can. And And, you know, yes, people are asking about backpacking the trail quite a bit more. You know, they have some time to do something like this. And our recommendation for those people is that they have the resources in case they did come down, unfortunately, with coronavirus, that they'd be able to quarantine wherever they may be for as long as they need to get better. So, you know, we certainly don't want the virus to spread, and we want to keep people safe on the trail. And we also realize that people need this right now, maybe more so than ever. And I think a lot of people are realizing the resource that the Ice Age Trail is. It's a place for that sort of mental break, that physical rejuvenation, that opportunity to really step away in some respects from what's going on and be healthy while you're doing it. So, yes, we've seen a lot of increased use on the trail all across the state, but you can imagine places like Devil's Lake and Lapham Peak are you know, quite busy. So
you mentioned the wear and tear on the trail. How can we leave a lighter footprint? What can hikers do?
Yeah, we follow leave no trace principles. That's really what it comes down to. So these are, you know, seven principles, and primarily, I think one of the biggest things we see is, you know, people just stay on the trail. Be prepared to have some muddy boots or shoes, whatever your method of walking is, entails, and just stay on the trail as best you can. You know, obviously when people are coming, step aside, but we don't want people sort of widening out those wet spots by walking around them, and you know, you'll be okay. So just stick to the trail.
And in terms of, you know, if you see litter on the trail or something that shouldn't be there, I would imagine you would say pick it up, but what should you do?
Yes. So, you know, our volunteers go out and they have gloves and they pick up trash. A lot of times that happens at trailheads, but, you know, by and large, the hiking community is one that they do pick up, and they don't leave trash elsewhere. It tends to be at the parking areas where we oftentimes see the most trash. More people are maybe not there to hike necessarily. So, you know, please pick up after yourselves. And if you're comfortable and you have the proper, like, safety equipment, you know, you can pick up trash. But we do have volunteers that go out and do that sort of work.
Are you looking for more volunteers right now?
Yes and no. So we are always looking for volunteers and always welcome volunteers. I will say our volunteer group is just, you know, such a welcoming community. There are about 2,800 active volunteers across the state, or there were in 2019, and so we're always looking for volunteers. They, you know, without our volunteer crew, the trail would be little more than a line on a map, and so we really do a lot in supporting our volunteers, and, you know, just really appreciate them. But right now, we're having limited crews going out, so small groups, socially distancing. So you can always go to our website, iceagetrail.org, and there's a place to register for events or to see what's going on locally. So we have 18 different volunteer chapters, like clubs across the state that host events. And we have a pretty extensive set of protocol in place for making sure people are safe and volunteering during the pandemic. But the groups are smaller. We can't host quite as many people as we used to, but there are enough options that I would encourage people, if a project is filled up and we're no longer taking volunteers, that they look to support one of the local chapters or vice versa.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Luke Kloberdans, who's Director of Philanthropy for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. We're learning about the trail, keeping it up, and Luke's journey on it. You can join in with your questions about backpacking, about treks that you want to take, or even particular sections of the trail that you're wondering about. We're at 800-642-1234. So, Luke, let's get started on some advice on hiking for people who are considering hiking the trail. You know, you mentioned do the research, get the maps out. How should people get started? And in terms of gear, what should they start thinking about?
Sure. So I think the in terms of, like, getting started and doing some of that research, you know, the best place to really get going is on our website. So we have a very detailed map that our GIS specialist has put together, Tiffany Stram, and the trail map, the hiker resource map. And I would encourage starting there, sort of seeing what, all right, here's what I'm getting into, or finding that local sort of segment that where you can test and, you know, get your trail legs. So I suggest going there. And then in addition to that, I recommend purchasing the Ice Age Trail Atlas and guidebook. And we have a there's a new copy out right now, so it just came out this year. So everything's fresh. All the information is totally up to date, or as close as it can be. And so doing some of that research, and then in terms of the gear and what to bring, you know, there's so many different philosophies on this. So there are some people that hike with packs, backpacks as little as 8 pounds, the ultralight crowd. I'm not quite that ultralight. I like my creature comforts. So
you like your sleeping bag, I understand.
Yeah, my sleeping pad. Yeah,
or your sleeping pad. I'm sorry.
Yeah. My luxury item was a full length inflatable sleeping pad. I didn't compromise on my sleep, but you know, there are just different sorts of things that you need to figure out what works for you.
Yeah, I would assume that the more you give yourself the creature comforts, the heavier that pack would get.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to like really want it in order to carry it. And I think, you know, figuring out how you want to pack your pack. And, you know, there's plenty of resources online, plenty of gear lists or suggested gear lists. You know, any one of our supporters are happy to share that information with you. And then attend a forum. We do a lot of presentations on how to hike the trail, where we will bring our packs and talk about what it is. But you know, in terms of weight, I think there's an old saying that I abide by, which is ounces lead to pounds, and pounds lead to pain. So the less you can take,
the
better.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call. Ted is in Harland. Hi, Ted.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question whether you on this trail would encounter any bears or any dogs or any kind of hazards from wild animals.
Sure. Good question. So we get this a lot, and you know, especially across the northern tier of the state, one can expect to see a bear or plan for it anyway. But you know, being that bears are hunted in Wisconsin, they largely avoid us. Every bear that I've seen has, you know, taken off pretty quickly once I make myself known. So yes, you can see them, but again, they're likely to scoot off pretty quick. I think, you know, in terms of dogs, I encountered the most dogs that were not exactly friendly during my road walks, you know, naturally going by farmhouses and things like that where the dogs might be out. So always, you know, be prepared. People do take bear spray on occasion. Some don't, some do. It's a personal preference, but the bear spray may be more for the dogs than the bears, actually. So, but we do recommend that, you know, you're aware of your surroundings and be safe when you're out there. And, you know, don't take any food in your tent with you and do some of those basic things to be safe.
We're learning how to enjoy the Ice Age Trail with Luke Cloberdance. He's head of philanthropy efforts for the Ice Age Trail Alliance. Still time for your story, your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more trail stories, backpacking tips in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're learning about hiking the roughly 1,200-mile Ice Age Trail. Let's get back to our conversation with the Ice Age Trail Alliance's Luke Cloberdance and take a call. Gil is joining us from Friendship this morning. Hi, Gil.
Morning.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to educate some people about how volunteers, you know, can work to help this project along. In the 2000s, the Portage Canal Society headed up an effort to build the second handicap accessible segment along the trail. And this is also follows the course of the Portage Canal, the historic Portage Canal. Actually, part of the trail was built on the diggings out of the canal when they made the canal that joined the Wisconsin River.
Oh, and Gail, you're breaking up, and I really do want to talk about accessibility sections in Portage. Can you help us out there, Luke?
Sure. So we do have a few sections that are fully accessible. So certainly there are places like Gail was mentioning, the Portage Canal. area where we have a section of trail that is open. And then, you know, in near Bone Lake and in Washera County, we created a loop that is fully accessible. And, you know, that's always our goal, is that each section of trail is accessible. We certainly realize that there are times when we create barriers with the trail, or the trail just navigates into a place that is more challenging for some than others. But, you know, so that is our goal. Every single time we go out, it isn't always possible, but we do try to make known those places that are more accessible. And again, our guidebook has these places listed, and there's also so difficulty ratings for each section, and we try to really make sure people understand what the opportunities are for each section.
Let's bring in Bob now in Lake Geneva. Good morning, Bob.
Hi there. How you doing?
Hi, good. What's your connection to the trail?
Well, I've been hiking it for a time now, mainly in the southern section near me. I've never had the time to do the through hike, but I wanted to synopsis a little bit here, because I think this is a great family activity too, and day hiking is really enjoyable along here. There's a lot of segments that are very beautiful through the Kettle Moraine that are very accessible from Milwaukee, for example. It's a great daytime family activity, and whether the family consists of just two people or more, you know, it's the trail's not there just for true hiking.
It's a
great thing to be doing as a weekend activity with the family. Now, I know in the current circumstances, you know, it's we don't want too many people on the trail, I guess, but I think that's something that people need to be aware of, that, you know, you don't have to be a thru hiker to enjoy the trail, so I'm trying to say.
Well, Bob, thank you for calling. And Luke, what about day hikes?
Oh, absolutely, Bob. Bob is spot on. You know, that's by and large the number one way people use the trail, is for day hiking. And, you know, the Ice Age Trail, when it's all done, will go through something like 137 communities. That's what we estimate right now. And of course, that changes with land protection, but absolutely, it's a daily resource for many people. So whether it goes through downtown Heartland or Delafield, or you know, or where I live in Lodi, or Cornell in the north, or St. Croix Falls, there are all these places where people can easily access the trail from their front door, and get out and experience the trail. But day hiking is by and large the number one use that we have in terms of, you know, hiking. The through hiker is a very small percentage of the people that actually do it. So,
about how many miles are being added to it each year?
You know, that varies so widely.
Okay.
You know, it's really depends on land protection. Of course, with the passage of the Great American Outdoors Act, we're really happy with Land and Water Conservation Fund getting full and permanent funding. So that is, we're working diligently to do that, but it varies. But what I can say is, when I did the trail in 2003, there are so many places along the trail where I was on a road walk that I look at now that are open for business. So, you know, I think we were having a general conversation here in the office, and we estimate it was probably about 75 to 100 miles have been added over the course of the last few years, decades, I should say. So, you know, it's slow, but it's steady, and
kind of like the trek itself.
It is, and like the impact of the glaciers. so it is something that we, you know, we look at. But you know, we do know though that like there are 2.3 million visitors on the trail every year, thanks to some research out of the University of Wisconsin Whitewater. And to emphasize Bob's point again, most of those people are the day hikers, and they're coming from out of state, or they were previously, but it's good to see people.
Well, Luke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate. It's been fun to talk about the Ice Age Trail with you.
Luke Cloverdance is Director of Philanthropy at the Ice Age Trail Alliance, and he hiked the 1,200-mile-long trail in 2003. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about food and memory.
Araceli Esparza's grandmother picked vegetables for canning factories in Wisconsin. Among the vegetables she picked were beets, which stained her hands with both their color and smell. Araceli tells us how the smell of beets unleashed memories of her grandmother's hands.
Honoring las manos de abuelita y el movimiento de César Chávez y los trabajadores. Betabel. Betabel rojo, sabor de tierra húmeda, la cual nunca he probado antes de hoy.
Honoring the hands of my grandmother and the movement of César Chávez and the workers. Red beet, the taste of a wet earth, the one I've never tasted until today. The curious thing is that I already knew your taste through the hands of my grandmother who long ago picked you. She pulled you from our mother earth. She picked you in the camps of Nebraska and the fields of Wisconsin, and your color stained her hands. Your smell permeated her skin, and I remembered her in the taste and smell of the beet. I know because today I smelled you beet, and with the taste in my mouth of the humid and wet mornings, once again I was there, hugged by her, mi abuelita. I wrote this because I wanted to honor the work that my grandmother has done. You know, growing up, she told me about the unions, about caring for my neighbors, about caring for those who didn't have, and to cherish what we did have. I know she was also part of the César Chávez movement of, like, very much against the pesticides that were used. And I guess I wrote this poem after eating beets that were given in a class that I was substituting for. The beets were from a community garden program that gives their harvest to schools with a high percentage of children on free reduced lunch programs. None of them had tasted beets, the children, that day. And I thought I hadn't either. And the moment the bag was opened and we passed out the snacks, the entire room filled with her, mi abuelita's smell. Just that earthy morning, that fresh, like it rained last night and you can just feel things growing, right? I held back the tears while eating one, and I watched the kids inspect them, eat them, admire their color, and I knew then that it wasn't my first time eating one. I just never knew I had. Te jaló de la tierra madre, te piscó en los campos de Nebraska, en los fields de Wisconsin. My grandmother is 92 years old, and I'm sure her longevity has a lot to do with beets.
Tu color manchó sus manos, tu olor se impregnó en su piel. Recordé a abuelita con el sabor y olor del betabel. Lo sé porque hoy te olí, betabel, y con el sabor en mi boca de la tierra de las mañanas húmedas, y otra vez estuve allí abrazada de mi abuelita, ella.
Araceli Esparza is a poet, writer, and teacher in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org and find us on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.